Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
And 51551 on the text. Lorcan Collins, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, Philip. Thanks for having me on.
Fighting the good fight against being replaced by artificial intelligence.
Well, it's a good fight and we should all be involved in it as much as possible because there are very few jobs that are not threatened by the onslaught of AI. And it includes you and it includes me as well. There are various ways now that AI can take, say, 15 minutes of your conversation and have you say anything, right? It's an incredible invention, but it's also very dangerous. And my main reason for coming on is that a new company who have some involvement with Dublin City Council have launched an AI guide called Brendan.
And this is a tour guide now, Lorcan, yeah?
A tour guide, yeah. I mean, obviously, he's not a physical tour guide. That'll be in about 20 years or 30 years before they have a robot bringing you around. But this is a thing for your smartphone. Now, my point is, Dublin City Council obviously put money into this. And it seems shameful that they would spend money on something that is valueless and faceless for capital gain.
Okay, hang on a second. Faceless, yeah. Yes, I get yeah. that. But how do you know it's valueless?
Well, I think, my view on this is that, it's something that is, there's no connectivity with humanity. You're just going to walk around with your phone listening to the same script repeated.
Okay. Now, people. So hang on a second. Let's just explain this. It's a little bit like those museum tour guides where you can pop on the headphones and walk around from painting to painting or statue to statue. This is going to do the same, but using your own phone, you just walk around following a line on a map, presumably, to various historical points around the city.
Yeah, and my point is, if someone wants to do that, hats off to you. Well, why should Dublin City Council, which we fund, get involved with something like that, that could ultimately, in many years down the line, put guides out of a job? Right?
Now, put your fingers in your ear for a second, Lorcan,
because
this will hurt otherwise. I'm going to play people just a little clip of what it is that Dublin City Council's AI tour guide, Brendan, not to be confused with Lorcan, this is what Brendan sounds like.
It's grand to see you. Brendan here, and I'm absolutely buzzing to take you on a journey through my hometown, Dublin. Split by the River Liffey into north side and south side, it's the city centre that ties it all together. From lively Temple Bar and the Old City to buzzing Stony Batter and cool Portobello, we'll discover a wide range of historical, cultural and iconic spots. And guess what? Dublin isn't just rich in history and leisure. Far from it. It's also absolutely steeped in words. From Joyce's winding sentences to Heaney's earthy verses, Yeats' mysticism and the goat himself, Oscar Wilde, this city has bred some of the world's finest minds.
He doesn't sound like the worst person in the world now, Lorcan. I don't know if I want him to be my best friend forever, but I'd certainly sit down and have a pint with him.
Well, I don't know where to start with it, except for one thing. I've never heard anyone saying it's grand to see you. That's not a phrase that's in my thing. Hello, it's grand to see you. Look, the thing is, right, and this I mean this genuinely, we need to put some sort of controls on how much AI will replace humanity, okay? I'm actually writing a book at the moment on a great guy called Mike Quill, who was an IRA volunteer, and he founded this huge union in America in the 1930s. And he was great on automation and things like that. But he had Dr. King speaking at the conference, the TWU, Transport Workers Union Conference. And Dr. King, I'm using this as part of the book, he said, automation cannot become a blind monster which grinds out more material resources and snuffs out the hopes and lives of people by whom the industry was built. And there seems to be this sort of passion amongst a certain class of people to just replace everything with automated voices, and AI is part of that. And, you know, it's all about humanity. And really, this is disconnection. That's what this is, disconnection, you know. It's like this, Philip, sorry. There's a fella down the road from me. He's going to hate me now for saying this, but he replaced his lawn with artificial grass, okay? Now, it's not my place to admonish him, but imagine you were a worm underneath all that plastic, or you're a bee looking for some dandelions or white clover, and you land on this plastic garden. So I would consider AI to be part of the sort of, if I can use this word, plasticization of society. So we shouldn't encourage it by investing in these companies.
I would be very interested in hearing from anybody who has been taken on a tour of Dublin by Brendan. Please, 51551 or 0818715815 to tell us what the experience was like. What do you think that you offer, Lorcan, in your tours that Brendan can't offer?
Okay, well, look, first of all, I'm running the 1916 walking tour for nearly 30 years, and half of our customers are from Ireland. That's one thing. So I feel we're offering something that's quite unique. Mm. And here's the thing. People often say to me, what's the nuttiest question you were ever asked? And a kid from Dublin said to me, what did Pierce eat for breakfast on Easter Monday morning?
Did you have an answer?
A great question. Well, I happened to have an answer because he stayed in Sean T. O'Callaghan's house, and Mrs. Kelly left instructions for her daughter, Mairead McCallig, to feed the Pierces. So they had eggs, bacon and mutton chops.
Oh, brilliant.
Right.
Well, but there's no way in hell that AI would have that answer, well, or would probably make something up.
I asked ChatGPT, what did the Pierces have for breakfast there recently?
Oh, go on.
Just prepare them. Yeah. And they said this with confidence. They ate a simple utilitarian meal, tea and bread or sandwiches. So that's just one small example.
And did you interrogate them any further and say, where did you get this answer?
No, I didn't, because, you know, that's like encouraging him.
Well, it isn't. It isn't, because I had a very interesting one, Lorcan, recently, where I shot back questions when I was being fed something that I knew was nonsense. And yeah. ChatGPT doubled down and created a hyperlink to a purported Irish Times article and said, there you go, there's the proof. And of course, the article, the link didn't link to anything. It was actively trying to deceive me into believing that it had the answer to a question that it didn't have the answer to.
Well, here's the point. I have a podcast and I put a lot of work into it. It's called Revolutionary Ireland. And I spend days and sometimes weeks preparing 1 hour long podcast. And I want to research it and make sure it's perfectly accurate. And there's a podcast out now that is two AI robots talking to each other. Now, it's absolutely rubbish, but they even have them laughing and using little sort of, you know, what I just did there, an air. So the danger is that even something like a podcast could be replaced by AI. So we need to discourage it as much as possible. And we certainly don't want to go around like DCC, who tell you there's no money when it comes to paying you for doing a talk in a library, but they're willing to throw money. I don't know how much they had for this, but they did definitely put some money into this. And that, to me, is what's abhorrent.
€5,000 for 12 months was the answer to that question from DCC. And interestingly as well, they say that since this has gone live, they had given people the option to comment below the site that it was being promoted on, and they had to disable the comments and take them down because there was a number of offensive comments about poor Brendan circulating across social media platforms. That wasn't you now, Lorcan, was it?
Well, I haven't downloaded it because I wouldn't encourage it, so I definitely wasn't the person who did that. But we rely wholeheartedly on reviews, and I'm not blowing our trumpet, but we're in the top 10 on TripAdvisor, and we're only a small walking tour, and reviews are very important to us. And you know, I don't feel sorry for Brendan because he doesn't exist. So if he got poor reviews, you know, tough luck, because he stole all their information from books that people like myself have written about Dublin, about Ireland. And we have a problem with Meta at the moment, because you can go to a website and see if Meta took your books. And out of my four books, they have taken two of them for sure. They have stolen the content from my books, and I'm not alone in the world in that. And again, you know, who's going to pay us for all the research that we did? Not Elon Musk.
Okay, so let me clarify that. They have scraped, they have copied, or actually stolen is your word, but scraped or copied is the word that they would use, the contents of your book. And where have they posted it?
That's part of Meta's AI system.
Okay.
You know, there are people protesting against this.
Well, look, on the upside, at least Meta is learning from your knowledge.
Yeah, but you know, we've spent a lot of time researching that stuff, and if somebody wants to take it and use it in written format, they have to ask you for permission and pay you. But Meta feel that they're so powerful they
free.
Can just take it. Yes.
Declan Hughes, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. Good. Thank you very much.
What did you want to say on this?
Well, I just want to say, you know, as chapter head for the International Ecotourism Society here in Ireland, it just, that chap there, he was talking, it reminded me, I was at an event in the foothills of the Himalayas there in Rishikesh, and it was a chap, he gave an amazing talk. He said, we live in a world where people are becoming more like robots, and robots are becoming more like people. And that resonated with me. And I think with technology, we need to harness the tech, but never, ever let it become, you know, superior to humankind, let's just say. And I think with the hospitality industry, people make travel and tourism what it is, you know, not robots. And we need to retain that Cade Mille Fáilte, that Irishness. You know, that personal touch.
We do, but we live at a point in time when people seem to be more comfortable engaging with their phones than they do with real people. So the question then becomes, what do we do if we want them to have a good experience and a good time while they're here in Ireland? Do we just ignore the fact that they prefer to do this online? Do we only offer them real world, real people services?
No, there has to be a balance, and apps are very useful. Really, you know, we're developing an app ourselves. And I think but you need to kind of create it in a way that it will benefit not just the user, but the people, you know, that it will support. You know, like travel and tourism, the tourism dollar is quite strong, and a lot of businesses are usually dependent on tourism. But we need to kind of focus it on specific areas, you know, like to avoid mass tourism or to avoid, you know what I mean, things like, you know, give useful detailed advice that's beneficiary, you know, that's beneficial insofar as the user will gain the most out of it, particularly the, you know, the person who's the visitor, the tourist, let's just say, or the guest, or
Lorcan,
whoever it is that's coming to Ireland.
Let me go back to you a second, Lorcan. Brendan is obviously competing with you on one level, but what platforms was he being advertised and promoted on by Dublin City Council? Was he in direct advertising competition to you?
Not really. Well, first of all, Philip, I don't advertise, okay? And
well, you do effectively via TripAdvisor, I suppose.
Well, yeah, they do that for us. I don't pay to put it, you know, on. Well, I have a website. Might as well advertise that now, 1916rising.com. But the only way I came across it was that somebody did a press release and it was in a few newspapers. That's where I saw it from, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel he's in competition with me personally. I think I'll be long dead before there's a robot walking around talking to people. But wouldn't it be nice
if Dublin City Council was to say you can have the virtual version and you can have the actual version in the form of Lorcan, that, you know, that they might advertise you as well?
Well, it would be lovely if they would do something like that, but they it would be nicer if they spent money on something that was valuable to humanity as opposed to valuable to some international corporation who are all over the place, by the way.
Now,
and they're going to be big, I'm sure, in years to come. It seems to me, if you wanted to make millions, you just have to go to someone and say, yeah, it's AI, that's what I'm involved in, AI. It's like they're throwing money at AI. And I just think, even if it's $5,000, even if it was €5, Dublin City Council should not be encouraging something like this.
Now, what I want you to do, Lorcan, is I want you to take a seat. Because you might get knocked down by a feather. Liam Tobin, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Philip. Well, very well, thanks.
You have taken Lorcan's tour.
I have. I think I've taken Lorcan's tour on three occasions, actually. I've taken it with my wife, I've taken it with a school group, and I took it with a number of foreign visitors I had. And
how did you find it and how did they find it?
Everybody loved it. I mean, Lorcan's tour is excellent. And, I mean, there's no way you're going to get a machine to replace, probably not his knowledge, but definitely not the humour and the interaction and the repartee and the wit that he brings, you know, and then the little tidbits and little side stories that he brings to it. You know, that's irreplaceable by a machine.
How did your visitors that you brought along like it as well?
They loved it. They loved it. The school kids loved them, actually. they thought it was fantastic. They were all sort of 9, 10-year-olds. And the foreign visitors were, they were fascinated by the history and just by the presentation and the whole interaction.
Does Lorcan do a good job, do you think, of somehow managing to simultaneously pitch to foreign visitors, to school children, and to people like you who would know their way around 1916?
I think he does, yeah. I think he does because, you know, as I say, he has the knowledge, firstly, and secondly, he has the, it's the human touch. It's the, well, he's an entertainer, he's a performer as well as a historian.
Okay. Well, let's put this to the test. I am going to do something completely unplanned. Producers don't know about it. They're going to start looking at me sideways now. When I say, Lorcan, I have another clip of Brendan and his take on Trinity College. I would like to hear yours first. Tell me something about the hallowed grounds of TCD as we're walking past College Green, looking in the front gate, that will amaze and astound me.
Well, it was the main building used by the British under General Low in 1916. On Tuesday of Easter week, Low occupied the building and they closed the doors and closed the gates, and members of the Officers' Training Corps were up on the roof taking pot shots at pretty much anybody that walked by, which happened to include a few Australian and New Zealand soldiers who were on R&R here in Dublin, and they wore a slouched hat very similar to the Irish Citizen Army, who wore their slouched hat like the crongy, the same as the Boers wore. That was in honour of them. And there was some confusion about who was who. But regarding Trinity, obviously, if there was one place in Ireland or Dublin that I would have concentrated on trying to occupy, it would have been the college, because it's in the centre of the city. But the problem, of course, was with the cancellation order in 1916 by Owen McNeill, mass confusion, fewer than ever before would turn out, etc. So you had to reduce down the positions that you were going to occupy. So Trinity, I always like Joyce's phrase, a dull stone set in a cumbrous ring. Such a beautiful phrase.
A dull stone set in a cumbrous ring. Okay, that's good. I knew about Low. I knew about the closing of the gates. I did not know anything about the pot shots being taken at the Anzac troops as they passed by. That is Lorcan Collins' instant, on-the-spot take on Trinity College. Now, let's see what AI Brendan has to say about Trinity.
Now, I need you to put on your best garb, or better yet, your most impressive degree, because we're about to dive into one of the most prestigious academic havens in the world, Trinity College, a living, breathing piece of history. Founded in 1592, this lush green campus sits proudly surrounded by the bustling streets of the city. Can you feel the buzz? This dynamic blend of academia and urban life is complemented by grand Georgian architecture, where centuries of knowledge have been passed down through generations. And let me tell you, this is the very place where the likes of Jonathan Swift, Samuel Beckett, and the great Oscar Wilde honed their craft, and where Ireland's literary spirit continues to thrive. How awesome is that?
Okay, I take it back. I don't want to go for a pint with him. He's certainly not going to be my best friend forever. I learned absolutely nothing there.
Philip, can I say to Liam Tobin, thank you very much for your lovely comments, Liam. I remember you because you shared a name with Liam Tobin, who was one of Michael Collins's intelligence operatives.
You're showing off now, Lorcan.
No, but I think I even asked Liam Tobin, was he related to him? Or maybe I didn't, Liam, did I?
You did at one stage, Lorcan, yeah, and I'm not. I'm not in any way related, but, you know, it's nice to share a name with somebody even who played a bit of a role in the history of the country.
It is very good. Well, I have another good piece of news for you, Lorcan Collins. Dublin City Council have been on to us, and they say that they have no plans to promote this City Me app any further.
Well, that sounds great. That's great news, actually.
And there you
while
go.
While we're on the subject, I'd like to know. I have three good friends who ride horses around Dublin. They're three good guys: Patter, Patrick, and Patrick, up at St. Stephen's.
Patter,
Green.
Patrick, and Patrick. Is this the start of a joke?
The three P's. No, no, it'd be a Brendan joke if it was. But they Dublin City Council have placed all these flower pots in their area for no apparent reason, and we're trying to get them removed. And the more I see these flower pots, they're about a foot tall or 1.5 feet tall, and they're randomly placed around Dublin now, and people are tripping over them and what have you. And this is another example of DCC, just somebody comes along and goes, here, do you want all these flower pots?
We'll go and we'll get an answer to that one, and we'll do that on another day. But at the moment, we'll draw a line under Brendan and that news. The Dublin City Council said that they've no plans to promote this app any further, and people can go and they can book themselves a tour with the real deal, Lorcan Collins, on what did you say it was again? 1916rising.com?
1916rising.com. Yeah, 1916rising.com. And my website for my books is lorcancollins.com. So there you go.
Many continued successes and tours, Lorcan Collins. Thank you very much. And Liam and Declan, I'm going to take a break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
I thought that we were moving on from artificial intelligence with this next call, but in a way, we're kind of not, because its fingerprints are absolutely everywhere. Martin O'Brien, how are you?
Hi, hello, Philip.
You applied for a job.
I've been applying for jobs there recently, and a couple of weeks back, I came across one for an IT job, and it's asked normal questions at the start, and then I came across a few questions that I found a little bit, I don't know, unnecessary for the role that I was applying for.
Go on, questions like, sorry, after you've done your date of birth and your education and your experience and your skills and so on, what were these questions then? The unnecessary questions, you think?
Well, I don't know if they're unnecessary or not, but I just felt it was very personal, you know?
Go on.
Like they're asking ethnic background, religion, caring responsibilities, sex assigned at birth, sexual orientation, gender identity. Your religious beliefs as well.
Now, were these asterisk questions, you have to fill in an answer here, or were they optional?
They were asterisks, but in the drop-down box, then you could choose prefer not to say it as well.
Okay.
So it looked like, if you're looking very quickly and, you know, when you see the asterisks, you think straight away, okay, I have to fill this in, but...
So is there a part of you that's thinking that, you know, I can't just skip over this section of the application and move on? I have to make an active choice here to say, I prefer not to say, I prefer not to say, I prefer not to say, and that makes you look like you're kind of withholding?
Well, as a researcher I was talking to earlier on said, it's like when you, no answer is an answer, you know. It's like, okay, what is, you know, when you don't answer these questions, it's, you kind of like have the feeling that maybe somebody's thinking, okay, what is this person hiding, you know? Mm. Especially for a job application, you know, it's, yeah, it's, I think a lot of people would actually think that they have to, you know, answer these questions, you know? It don't matter how much they want to or don't want to answer the questions, I do think that they would feel some sort of obligation to answer this.
Well, particularly now, and this is the reason that I brought up AI, we know that the HR departments of large companies are using AI to filter out the first round of CVs in job applications. And if, as you say, they have, you have decided to not give all of this information or not pass it on, maybe the algorithm might take a sort of a dim view of that and say, Martin's not really playing ball with us.
Yeah, that is a possibility. I, to be honest, I have no experience on these hiring practices, so I can't say if that is the case or not. But it is, you know, my problem with this was that I don't know, I find these questions way too personal. I don't think an employer should have the right to be asking you these sort of things. So
the flip side of it is, though, that employers want to create workspaces in which people of minority sexual orientations or gender assignation at birth or whatever it is, food preferences, religious preferences, will feel at home, will feel safe, won't feel in any way singled out. And they can't do that. They can't offer those protections unless they know who it is that they are employing.
Yeah, in my opinion as well, like that, you know, if your organization should reflect society, you know. But I still think that, I don't know, like something like sexual orientation, especially even religious beliefs and stuff like that. It could have an effect on some jobs that, you know, that some people are doing. Maybe their beliefs, if they're being asked to do something that's something against their religious beliefs, that you know, that could play a part. But okay, that was a couple of weeks ago. Was it yesterday? I was applying for another job which was not IT related. And one of the questions was your marital status. And in the drop-down list, there was, you know, like single, one or two others that were, you know, that would be, you know, normal enough. But one was like married once and then married more than once. So I kind of struggled to
What relevance is that? Yeah, that's...
Exactly, yeah. So
that's very puzzling now, because that seems to be, well, I'm guessing, I'm surmising, but that would seem to be trying to establish more about you as a person and your particular makeup rather than your dependents or whether you're going to be looking for time off work to nip off home early or not, isn't it? It's a strange one. The other thing about this information, though, that strikes me, Martin, is that while the intention to get this data off you might be good and might be to create a safe workspace for people, the information can also, and you in IT would probably be painfully aware of this, that data, once it's out there, can be used for other purposes.
Oh, yes, of course. And filling out these, okay, when you fill out any of these application forms and stuff like that, online, you don't know exactly how safe the data is that you're entering. Where is it being stored? Mm. Could any person with basic knowledge of hacking, could they get into your get into those databases and make all of that information like publicly available? That's also a possibility.
Absolutely. I mean, and you'll suddenly find yourself on the receiving end of texts from people saying, God, Martin, I've seen all your data out there. I didn't know you were married seven times.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, it could be, okay, that could be the difference between getting a visa to certain countries. Or if you're working in a country that's, I don't know, where it's unsafe to have certain beliefs or certain orientations, that could make life pretty pretty uncomfortable as well, you know?
Well, let's just put the question out there generally, 51551. Do companies need this data? Can they create a safe and a dignified workspace for everybody without this data? Or is this just too much information for any individual to have to give to their employer? Not to their friend or to extended family members, but to their bosses. We have a statement from one of the companies that you were talking about. No need to go into who they are, but what they say is, we believe in treating each other with respect and giving everyone an equal opportunity to get on. As part of our online application process, there is an optional diversity questionnaire, which is anonymous and not linked to any name or individual applicant details. Ah, okay. Anonymous and not linked to any name or individual applicant details. From a DEI perspective, that's diversity, equity and inclusion, DEI perspective, this information helps us to understand the diversity of candidates who are applying for positions with the company and thus enables us to become a better and more inclusive employer for all of our colleagues. That's a good question to put to you as an IT person. Is this kind of information ever really truly anonymized, or would it be possible to link your ticking of various boxes back to your name?
I'm sure there's probably a timestamp on all these things. So you send in your application and the time is, okay, they receive your application at 20 past two. Okay, you fill out one of those questionnaires at 21 minutes past two. So unless there's couple of hundred people or even a few dozen people applying at the exact same time, then
absolutely, I get you.
Easy enough to link.
Okay. The basic question there that you want the answer to is, why does your boss need to know how many times you were married? What on earth do they have, what business do they think they have asking that question? 0818 715 815. Martin, thank you very much.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
Hello, Amy. How are you?
Hi, Philip. How are you doing?
Well, your dilemma is one that is going to resonate with so many people as the mercury soars and little people keep on asking for cold drinks. Your local store got a slushy machine.
Yeah, so I suppose my issue is that it's just literally was installed just last week. And I was really surprised to see it yesterday, to be honest. I'm really disappointed. I thought it was a real backward step on the part of the management. I spoke to the lovely staff at the till and she said she completely agreed with me. And she said the queue was down the shop on Friday. I suppose what really just...
And like, what colour are the drinks in this particular slushy machine?
They are, one is blue and one is red. And I just know because they've made, these slushies and the serious health risks for young children has made front page headlines recently. And there's been guidelines put out by the UK health authorities. I know there's been talk. I don't know what our legislation is in Ireland around them. But I know when I was up in Donegal last summer, I actually spotted a warning for the first time. I mean, I'm no angel. Kids have junk food, but they're just not allowed slushies. And I happened to notice a warning on one of the on the slushy machine up in Donegal. And that really sparked my attention. I think as a parent, you know, these things are not a health choice, a healthy choice.
But at the moment, it's important to say here, Amy, that, you know, insofar as we know, and there is new research being done in this area, but insofar as we know, they are safe. Everything in moderation. It's the dose that is the poison, the amount of it that you take that is going to do the harm. But having a slushy machine in a shop is perfectly above board and kosher. Having the occasional slushy is probably not going to do you that much harm at all.
And I'm not a scientist. I'm just a mum that would say, well, if there's guidelines that have come from our closest neighbour to say that these things are, these drinks are dangerous, and they have been, I don't know, I think that, like, they've, you know, they've been told they're not for children under four in the UK, I think is what they've said. Mm-hmm. It's the guidelines there. I mean, that's just a red flag. You know, there's lots of junk food in our shops that...
Well, what happened was there was a study that was released back in March that said that there's a link between these frozen drinks and glycerol intoxication syndrome.
Sure.
Now, a link does not mean that there is a proven joining up of the dots between drink this and you're going to get glycerol intoxication syndrome. It's a kind of a... More research needs to be done in this area. And the lead person on that was Professor Ellen Crushell, who's a metabolic paediatrician at Temple Street and at UCD.
And she knows an awful lot more than me.
and me too. I'm the 2 minute expert on this particular subject now, reading what it is that the FSAI has sent into us on this here. But you're right that the information around slushies is changing about, you know, who it is appropriate for to be consuming these drinks.
Yeah. And I suppose I just think it's reasonable to assume that, you know, there's lots of parents that aren't aware of these warnings and aren't aware that, you know, there is research out there that says, you know, for children under certain ages, they're not recommended for under fours, and then there's a limit to under eights, I think was what the research had
suggested,
had said,
that it should be revised up to under eight.
Are your kids
particularly attracted to them, Amy? I mean, they're bright, they're colourful, they're the kind of colours that kids in particular are going to be drawn to. Has it worked on your kids?
It hasn't. Now I'm pretty strict when it comes to those kind of things. And if I've seen a headline, and if I've seen a machine that says warning, not for consumption of under four, for children under 4 years of age, which was, you know, in front of me when I was in Donegal, you're going, I'm certainly not going to give that to my kids.
And when your kids
want to get a bar of chocolate or an ice cream instead,
when
you know?
Your kids see other kids drinking it, do they not say, "Oh, mum, please, please, please," in that particularly high-pitched whine that is designed to just get under your skin and make you cave after not too long?
Oh, I'm no Mary Poppins. We all succumb to some kind of whining, but not when it comes to slushies, no. And do you know, my kids just know. They just look at me as if to say, Mum's never going to let me have one of them. And I'm like, no, you're grand. What else do you want? Here's your option. There's other options out there. There's loads of other options, other treats that you can have that don't come with a warning.
That's brilliant. How did you get to the stage of parenting that they just know not to ask you?
Because I have the joy of being a stay-at-home mum, and they just know. When it's no for certain things.
So your spine is made of stern stuff, and mother is not for bending on these kind of issues.
When it comes to chemicals going into my kids, yeah, absolutely.
I know, but look, there is chemicals in everything. There is chemicals in bananas. And again, I go back to the idea that, you know, it's the dose that is the poison. It's the amount that you take. How do you cope then with somebody who's obviously put quite a bit of effort and thought into this? How do you cope with all of those other demands? Are they frequent? Are you constantly finding yourself saying, no, you had a treat yesterday, no, not now?
No, I mean, to be honest, it's a treat a day. And then when you're on holidays, you can, you know, there's more than one treat. You can... It's great to be able to say yes to lots of other things.
When I was a lad, way back in 1970s, 1980s, it were a treat a week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
When did we get to the idea of a tree today? I mean, it's.
Yeah.
I know how we did. It's because of the environment that we all live in, and that these ever-present suggestions and prompts that this is what you should do. It's normalized because it's all around you in every shop that you walk into, every street you walk down. There's images of all of this stuff. Can you possibly resist it, Amy?
2.1. Here comes one now. Sorry, I needed.
Oh, okay. Let's see what they ask for. Hang on a second now. Let's see what the first thing that they're looking for is.
They're trying to work the television.
Is it just? Hang on a second. No,
I'm sorry, I do know that there's going to be lots of people that don't agree with me and they just think, why are you giving out about this? Every parent can make their own choice. And of course, every parent can and does make their own choice. But I just don't feel like it's an informed choice if there isn't, if in one county in our island, it's got a big warning that says, you know, not for consumption for under fours, and, you know, in a different county. Okay. Then there's no warning whatsoever. Now I didn't.
We don't know that the ingredients in the one in Donegal are the same as the one in your locality. It could be different. It's highly unlikely that it is, but I see exactly what it is that you're saying. Why are these warning notices not on every single one of these machines if it was merited?
I just think that's giving parents an informed choice to then say, well, hang on, like you're flagging something. Make a different choice, no?
Yeah.
Go ahead, fire away. You know that there's a warning out there, and then you do your bit of read around it and say, okay, well, it's actually only if I let them have three of them or whatever, depending on their age and size, each to their own. My kids don't be getting one.
But being informed is helpful. I remember it was not that many years ago, I think it was back 2010, 2011, something like that, that the EU said that we had to start labelling food colourings, some of them, with the information that it may cause hyperactivity in your children. I bought a couple of them for a baking session during the summer holidays. Saw that and said, here, hang on a second. I'm afraid to say there was food waste. They went straight into the bin. Amy, your question is, at the end of the day, why are we not being told on all of these machines that there may be a need to limit consumption and certainly to restrict it to the over fours, if not the over eights?
Yeah, and that's based on the research that's available to us.
Okay. Well, the Food Safety Authority of Ireland is currently reviewing its guidelines in the light of that study that I talked to you about, Professor Ellen Crushell's study, and they said that they will publish any necessary changes to their advice once that review has been completed. Was that another request for television, or have they switched to a food?
They want the paddling pool out now.
You're going to be busy. Amy, thanks very much for your call.
Shop online before you travel and click and collect your favourites.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
Now, they are talking in the Dáil at the moment about yesterday's programme and about the college fees. We'll see if we can get to that a little bit later on. I want to turn our attention to something that's not just a summertime problem, but it's probably a considerably deal worse at this time of year than it is the rest of the year. Callum Anderson, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, how are you doing?
22 years driving a truck. How many wing mirrors would you say you've lost in that time?
Oh, not too many, thankfully, but it's always a risk, you know.
And are you losing more recently?
Not so much wing mirrors, but we travel with high-sided trailers, and you're always at the risk of damage to the tops of your trailers, from hedges and bushes not being trimmed back correctly and not being trimmed back far enough.
Or not being trimmed back high enough, being trimmed for cars but not for vehicles like yours.
Yeah. Like if you travel down any rural roads, you'll see trees growing out over the roads. But the trees are not they're not maintained like that. That's been caused by the shape of the vehicles travel down along it. And that's you're always at the risk of damage, you know. We carry packaging material for baby food, so we obviously can't have our trailers damaged, or we need them to be watertight and airtight, and it's a sterilised product, and your cargo is compromised if the trailer gets punctured, you know.
Okay, so if there is a branch punctures any kind of a hole, no matter how small or big, in the side of one of those containers, is the entire cargo thrown out then?
Well, it is, yes, because it's a sterilised product, so they're not going to take the risk of there being something that is, of it being contaminated, you know.
Okay.
But that's it, the load is dumped.
I suppose some people would say, well, hang on a second, what business do HGVs have being on small country roads?
Well, you could say that, but not every factory is on the side of a motorway, or not every packaging facility is on the side of a motorway.
But you should they not be sending smaller trucks to places down narrow country roads and bring it to a logistics warehouse and then transfer it into the bigger vehicle?
Well, you can do that, but that's adding costs to everybody and everything, and then there's a green element to it. You know, you're creating more journeys than is necessary. There is a height limit in Ireland of 4.65 metres, and our trailers are running on the limit of what's legal, but the trees are not being maintained to that limit.
And this is not about preserving biodiversity and leaving nests intact, because the councils are allowed to trim roadside hedges all year round, aren't they?
As far as I'm aware, but I mean, surely there has to be a health and safety element too. Like, there's not just the trailers can get damaged. When you're travelling down rural roads, you have to keep your vehicle out further from the hedge to protect your trailer, protect your wing mirrors and what have you, and therefore pushing larger vehicles, sometimes in some cases, onto the other side of the road to get around bends to avoid damage. You know, so there's a health and safety element to us as drivers as well, you know. And when you have high hedges, you can't see what's coming around. It's making bends very blind, you know.
Let me bring in John Ryan here. John, good afternoon.
How you doing?
You're on the sharp pointy end of exactly the same problem.
We are, yeah. We provide pallet distribution covering Leash, Offaly and Tipperary. Rural businesses, farms, households, you name it, we bring it. And the ditches are just getting more and more overgrown as every year goes by, and there's less and less being done. It's crazy.
And it's less and less being done at the height to which you're stacking your panels, because, you know, most roads are relatively well maintained in those first 2 metres, are they not?
No. And we see the hedge grow on the verges on the side of the road, where before they'd always be trimmed back even in season, where if you met a pedestrian or something, he or she could stand in off the road and let the lorry pass safely. Now they can't because they're overgrown so much. It's crazy.
And what do you think that is? About preserving birds' nests or just a failure to maintain?
It's nothing to do with the birds. The birds don't make nests on the side of the hedges. The birds will make nests inside where it's safe, and they're not stupid. They've done it forevermore. It's just council or landowners or whoever it is are not being proactive enough, and it's not being enforced for someone to take responsibility for it.
You're not the first person that I've heard saying that, John. I've talked to a contractor whose job it was to cut these hedgerows, and he said birds don't nest in the hedges right on the side of the road. They'll go onto the other side of the hedge, perhaps, but there's plenty of hedges elsewhere for them to go. They don't need to nest on the side of the road.
Exactly. And like, if we lose a left-hand wing mirror off a truck, that truck is out of service straight away. It can't even come back to the yard because a driver can't see his left-hand side. It's far too dangerous. So we have to get a mechanic out of that truck straight away. The downtime, the money, the cost of the mirror is one thing, but the downtime and, you know...
And do you have to send another truck out to take that container then if it's perishable? Or
no,
when you're dealing in pallets, you're not in the perishable business?
We do some perishable business, but a lot of our groupage is rigid, so you can't take it. The trailer doesn't connect. It's all on one body. So we have to send the mechanic out because we can't get the truck back. It's too dangerous.
Wing mirrors are pretty involved pieces of technology now as well. When you consider that some of them have sensors to let you know when there's traffic coming up on the inside of you. You can obviously adjust the position from inside in the cab. Some of them are heated as well. I'd imagine
you're
they run to
for
a pretty
wing
penny.
Is about 1,000 euros.
Okay.
And if as well, like if we meet an oncoming vehicle and, you know, everyone slows down, everyone's taking their time, but yes, you have to keep in where there's a bough of a tree or anything and a body gets a slap or, you know, the damage has been done is crazy. And even coming up onto T-junctions and turns just needs to be cut back. And like, we don't care who's responsible for it, just some, as long as it's done, whether it's the landowner okay. or it's the council or wherever. Like I'm paying for my own premises at home, we're paying 10,000 euros a council rate for the year. We're in rural Leash. We get nothing for that.
Okay.
We have to travel 2 miles down an hour road. The road is like a roller coaster. It hasn't been resurfaced or anything. It's a boggy road. But the ditches aren't even being cut. Like,
message,
you're paying 10,000
message
euros
to the councils is loud and clear from both you and from Callum then, John. Don't just cut the hedges to the first 2 metres. Go on up 3-4 metres high for us, please.
No, go 4.65 is
4.65,
the legal height.
4.65, okay.
That's what the legal height, that's, the government have made that the legal height in Ireland.
Okay.
Cut the ditches to it.
John, thank you very much. Callum, thank you very much. Back to the college fees. Shannon, living in Dublin, €800 rent per month. Now, you're not actually going to be doing an undergraduate course next year, so you wouldn't have been getting the €1,000 off. But what kind of a difference would it have made to you had you to go and find that extra grand?
Hi, Philip. How are you doing? No, if that was the case, I think it would have been much tougher because I was already, when I was doing my undergraduate, it was already incredibly difficult. Like, I'd be working during the weekends and during the week while still trying to do my undergraduate and such. So especially for young people who don't have a lot of financial support from their families and parents, I think it'll be really, really tough for those students. Mm-hmm. I did have...
Would it have been the difference for you, Shannon, had you had to go and find that extra grand last year? Would it have been the difference between continuing or going into debt?
I probably would have had to go into some kind of debt or at least take out a loan if possible. It's just a lot, especially for a student. It's in Dublin prices. It doesn't sound a lot to some people, but in general it is. It is quite a lot.
What's your master's in?
It's in space science.
Wow. Where are you doing that?
I'm doing that in UCD.
Space science, I didn't realise that it was... That is an entire degree in and of its own right, yeah?
Yeah, no, I think it's UCD's the only one that runs that master's.
And scores of people were saying yesterday that particularly for people like you who are going to have valuable degrees in things like space science, you should be allowed to take out loans and then work off that debt after you begin working. How do you feel about that?
That's one thing, though, is do you really want to have loans and debts to pay on your very first job when you're really trying to just figure everything out at the beginning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the great, especially because you're not even living as a student. You're not normally living in a comfortable scenario. You're either like renting at a place or a house or with other people. So, yeah.
All right, Shannon, thank you very much for your call. We'll have to leave it there. We're out of time today. Sean Marin was our broadcast coordinator. James Feeney was on sound. Today's programme was produced by Emily Phelan. Ray Darcy is on the way.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
Get in touch on 0818 715 815 or WhatsApp 087 484 8888.